Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Today's Bite Size episode is from the conversation I had with Harry. Now, Harry is a school friend of mine, and watching him embrace sobriety has quite simply been a joy. We've been in touch for years over social media, but we hadn't had a chance to have a proper catch-up until this conversation. He covers how sobriety helps him to be more available. He touches on the topic of sober slimming and talks about the magic of the future. In fact, he talks about the magic of the mundane. We spend our lives trying to distract from it, but when you really immerse yourself in the present moment, it's actually beautiful. And that's a gift he's found of sobriety.
People don't laugh at you now when you say things like, I'm sober. There's that glimmer of recognition in their eyes that they know that they've got issues with it too. You get to your mid-40s and you think, we've all been binge drinking since we were kids. We've just woken up to the fact that it's not going to end well.
No. And haven't we? We've been binge drinking since we were kids. So we grew up in the 90s, 2000s, and for women, it was Zoe Ball. And I suppose, who were your heroes growing up?
It was slightly different for me being a classical musician. I was looking up to people like the musicians in my family, my brother and my cousins, and they were still 6-7 years older than me, and they'd been through college and they were now working. And it was just, boozing was part of the culture. It was we finished the show, we get down to the bar for last orders or whatever it is, and then you get on a session because it's 10:30 and you know you've got to get as many beers in as you can before it closes down. So that sort of, that need to be drinking a lot was just part of the culture. It was just what you did. And then going to university, it was the same kind of thing. All of my sort of what I would call best friendships over the years have somehow involved a lot of drinking, being in the pub, clubs, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then it was the same when I started working when I was in 2002. It was, you know, young-ish, 20-something, moving to London for the first time after university and going to all the pubs in London and Canary Wharf after work. And just for years, just lots and lots and lots of booze-related social life.
Yeah.
And it was just everywhere, just part of everything.
So you work in the financial sector, don't you?
I do now. After my 3 months of sobriety in 2016, before then, whenever it was when I did it, I'd just done 3 months sober, and I went on an all-inclusive holiday in Mexico with wife and 3 kids. And I just spent all day at a swim-up bar and then went back to my room with the kids and slipped on some water and dislocated my right foot, had spiral fractures in my leg, and ended up in a Mexican hospital with surgery and a steel plate in my foot.
That's how you did that? Oh,
that's how I did that. So that period of sobriety didn't end very well because I got really, 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 really pissed and destroyed my leg. And then when we came back to the UK, I had some months off work. And then when I eventually had sort of rehabilitated my leg to the point where I could go back into the office, my heart wasn't in that job anymore. The promotion I'd been hoping for was delayed because I'd been off on the sick for 6 months. And then the opportunity came to basically be made redundant instead of getting back into work. So that's what I did. I took redundancy and decided to be a full-time stay-at-home parent instead of working in investment banking. And so that's when Daddy Daycare started for me and my family, 2016. And I spent 5.5 years as a full-time dad to 3 children. And it was going so very well until 2020, when I had spent most of 2019 coming on to, you'll discover soon, is my favorite topic of Slimming World. And I joined Slimming World in 2019. And I, in that year, I managed to lose 8 stone.
That is amazing.
And I was just about to go back to paid employment. In fact, I just had my first training session on March the 15th, I think it was, 2020, in my suit that now fitted again. But the job was at a school. And of course, then COVID happened and the job didn't happen. So then I spent another 18 months doing stay at home parenting
And
rather than,
homeschooling.
yes, but I now know what a fronted adverbial is. So I feel very proud of having got through lockdown.
So did you find with like daddy daycare, you call it, did you find the same amount of pressure that we get as the mummy wine culture? Did you sort of have that after the school run? You wanted the glass of wine after, was it normalized?
It's tricky to know, because being the guy in the woman's world, and I know it shouldn't be that, I know it shouldn't be the woman's world, but it is. 95% of the people at the school gate are the mums, aren't they? So
Yeah.
I wasn't kind of in that group of people. But well, the thing I have discovered about my own drinking is I didn't need any excuse. And I feel like I was probably the person that was persuading other people to be drinking rather than the other way around. It's a tricky one, because when you realize that, oh, hang on, I was the ringleader. I was the one putting pressure on other people to be doing the drinking, and sort of finding the excuse to get other people to do the drinking. And so it's the pressure wasn't there from the outside. It facilitates it. If you're the sort of person that wants a drink, you can get it everywhere. Even in,
Yeah.
the local trampoline park, there's a bar. In the soft play centre, there was alcohol. Yeah, I could see the look on your face. Yeah,
That must be London. They
seriously.
don't do that in Ross-on-Wye, I tell you now.
But seriously, you know, the sort of the glasses of wine in a plastic cup with a foil on the lid. You could buy them in the soft play centre. It's everywhere. It was but no. Even before I did full time parenting, it had got to the stage where drinking and planning drinking and making sure I could drink around looking after the kids was part of what I did, to the point where I knew that I had to bake in 15 minutes of time on the way home to be able to stop off at the shop to buy the wine that I was going to be drinking that evening.
It's like you
And
planned
so,
it in. Yeah.
yeah, like I said, it became the motivation, and the sort of the route to everything had to involve knowing where that was coming from. And the honesty that you have to have ultimately is quite sad when you look at yourself and think, did I really spend that long lying about the things in the way that I did, not just to other people, but to yourself, that's the reason why you're motivated to do particular things was because of knowing where you were going to get your next drink from. It's quite sad, but that's the past. And for the first time, I think maybe ever, I don't feel like I'm going to go back to it. I can't now think of any reason to do it. And 6 months is a long time, but I haven't yet gone through every single milestone and test of, am I going to drink or not? So I've got a birthday coming up. That's one thing. What else? Other things, like there's Valentine's Day. But then I did have somewhat I would call of an epiphany when I realized that I've never needed an excuse to drink. I never needed a reason. I never needed the event to be the reason why I was drinking. That just made it easier and more acceptable for other people that I was drinking.
Yeah.
And so about, I don't know, 6 or 8 weeks into this stint of sobriety, I had my annual appraisal at work, and I was hoping this year for a promotion, because I thought I'd done well and I'd filled all the forms in and I'd had all the right noises from work. And then I got my year-end appraisal, and it was, yes, Harry, you're very good, but we haven't got the headcount to promote you. And so I was really miffed. And I was on the way to Lidl in Ledbury, and Cheryl phoned up and said, I'm worried that you're going to go and buy some alcohol, and I don't want you to do that, because I know you're annoyed about work. And that suddenly dawned on me that why would I be triggered into drinking when I never needed a trigger before? And if I drank as a result of what had happened at work, then they would have beaten me. and I wasn't in control of it. So I decided not to. I definitely wasn't going to have a drink. And so that was the sort of first, what I would call, test of my resolve to give in to the, oh, that thing happened. And if somebody says to me, why did you give up being sober? You could use that as the excuse. Oh, I fell off the wagon because of X.
Yeah.
And that seemed like a good one, being passed over for promotion, but I didn't do it. What has really solidified this whole particular journey for me was some weeks after that. Very sadly, my cousin passed away. And he was one of the people who I had looked up to in those early boozing days. And he, like me, had suffered all his life with the need to drink far, far too much. And in the end, that was part of how he ended up passing away. And I decided to honor him, my cousin Giles, by not raising a glass to him, by not
Oh.
giving in to the demon that was part of what beat him. And so I'm going to keep that up. I'm going to keep on doing that, not raising a glass to him, because honestly, I think the world's better with me in it, because I'm great.
I think the world's better with you in it. I am so sorry, so, so sorry about Giles.
It's been horrible for a lot of people, but if I can make a difference to myself as a consequence of that, then I'm going to keep on doing it just for him,
Yeah.
if nobody else.
Yeah. So how is Cheryl about you being sober then?
I think she's still coming to terms with it. Like I said, just realizing that there are things about me that she likes and dislikes that aren't related to the fact that I drink too much. No, it's been what I've also been trying to not do is make her feel bad about the fact that she still has a drink. But she's always been in control of it. She'll have a couple of Jack Daniels or a glass of Prosecco or wine or whatever it is. And I've always admired the fact that she can do that. I was always very much at the point, well, why only have one or two? What's the point?
Yeah. I think when you're saying to yourself, what's the point? I mean, I used to be the same. Like, one? Why would I? Oh, and I tried to moderate, but moderation and me don't mix.
What I found with the non-alcoholic substitutes for drinks is it was very helpful at the beginning, and it was actually something that you had said to me in a social media exchange, which was, it's having the non-alcoholic beer is better than drinking beer. So whilst you might feel like you're substituting one bad habit for another habit, it's better than drinking the booze. So
Yeah.
don't think of it as like failing. But then I realized that I only needed to have one or two, because why would you drink 10 non-alcoholic beers?
You really wouldn't.
You wouldn't, you just don't. So I've ironically, I've learned moderation in non-alcoholic beer. Isn't that
Well, you've
great?
learned moderation in a substance that isn't addictive. That's the
Yes.
difference.
It's true. This
When
is
they
true.
take out the addictive part of it, it
Yeah.
becomes a lot easier to moderate. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. This is like me just blowing the proverbial smoke, Louise. I'm sorry if it sounds like that, but looking into the actual chemical reasons why you drink and what's happening inside your body and your brain, and realizing that there is a reason why you do it. It's not just that sort of, oh, yeah, it's great, I'm drinking. But the actual chemical reactions that happen inside your body and your brain before, during, and after. And what I had noticed was the looking forward to wine o'clock and then drinking something that isn't wine, you've almost had the enjoyment already, because you've got to that point. You've achieved the thing, and now you're celebrating with a drink of what isn't beer, but you still have that sense of achievement because you've done the thing. You've achieved it, and now I'm celebrating, but I know I'm not going to feel like rough tomorrow or make bad choices because of drink. The bad choice is just on me.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I don't really bother. Dale the other day, he got one of those bottles of, I think it was Bell and Co, so like the non-alcoholic Prosecco, and he's like, I'm gonna have a glass of this, which he'd never drink Prosecco. And he was trying to work out how to use the stopper, which because we have never, and I've never laughed so much. I'm like, next to the iron, that is the most underused item in our house. He couldn't actually put the stopper back on the bottle.
I must confess, I'm similarly averse to ironing.
Yeah,
No, not doing it. Not doing it.
There's no need. Life's too short.
It certainly is. I did go away and do my homework like you had asked. I have got three things that I wanted to just try and sort of identify as what's happened that's been sort of meaningful. And it was encapsulated by the phrase of one of your other guests was the magic of the mundane, something like that.
Ah, yes.
You know, I'm actually clearing out cupboards and emptying sheds and sorting through stuff that all the stuff that I would just, oh, I'm not doing that. I'd rather be drinking or being hungover. So I'm actually enjoying the things that I haven't been excited by. And I'm not saying I'm excited by clearing out the cupboards, but it just, but every time you do that, it's almost like cleansing, the catharsis of getting rid of stuff, you know, throwing away the old and making space for something new. And I think that's a good analogy for how I'm feeling about my life. I'm clearing away all the baggage of being drunk and making space for what could be.
Yeah. And I think it is the magic of the mundane, though, isn't it? And there's that condition, anhedonia, where your joy point has reduced due to regular alcohol consumption. And so you do have that moment. I don't know if you find it just after you stop drinking, where it can feel a bit flat.
Mm.
And life feels a bit flat. And then people judge sobriety on that first stage of sobriety. Well, this is rubbish. I don't know what to do this weekend. Clean out a cupboard, get stuffed. You know, you really don't feel like it. You're like, I just want a glass of wine. But then when you get past that point and that joy point, the hedonic point sort of comes back in, and you get joy from stupid like stuff. Like cleaning out a cupboard. You do, you get that feeling of achievement.
I'm just looking out my window at the playhouse in the garden, which has been chock full of junk for months. And then we had a wasp's nest. And I just looked at it thinking, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go. But this week, I have cleared it out, emptied it, done it, made it look nice. And every evening for the last three nights, two of my kids have been in there playing and doing stuff. It's not a direct link from me being sober, but it's just a consequence of the fact that I've just got off my backside and done something useful rather than just sitting watching Netflix, drinking whatever's in the fridge.
If you'd like to listen to the main episode, then head back to the 20th of February, 24. If you'd like to find out more about working with me, then head to my website, louisaevans.com. I don't just support with sobriety, I also help with many other areas, including anxiety, overthinking, and low mood. On the website, you'll find lots of resources, including my online Sober Resilience course, and if you use the code RESILIENCE544 as a Sober Rebel listener, you'll get a 30% discount. And also a range of hypnosis recordings. Use code SOBERREBEL, all one word, to buy one, get one free. Self-hypnosis is a very powerful and effective way to begin to reprogram how we automatically think about things. You'll find a range of different topics on my website. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests on the Sober Rebel podcast for sharing their story and for taking the time to talk to me. The Sober Rebel podcast will be back very soon. I'm just currently recording some fantastic episodes to share with you. I hope you have a good day.